You're listening to Reading Glasses, a show about book culture and literary life designed to help you read better. I'm author and book devourer, Mallory O'Meara.
And I'm Bria Grant, filmmaker and e-reader.
This episode, we're talking about unreliable narrators, which is why we're doing
each other's... Or are we?
Which is why we're doing each other's voice, but honestly, no one knows our voices that well, so it's probably not even funny to them.
I think people do. I think people do. But first, what are you reading, Bria?
I'm reading a book that I texted you about, or I finished this book, because I was like, have you read this book? This book is... The
I
weirdest
just bought
thing
this,
I've ever read, but in a
I just
way.
Bought. I bought it. I got it in the mail from bookshop.org because I bought it as soon as you told me about it.
It's called The Memory Theater by Karen Tidbeck. Karen Tidbeck wrote a book that both Mallory and I really liked called Amaka.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As soon as you texted me, I was like, oh, it's the lady who wrote Amaka, because we love that book so much.
Yeah, which is great. But she is a Swedish writer. This book, so I heard what this book was about, and that is what it's about, kind of, but like, giving you the opening of the book doesn't tell you what the book is, so it's very confusing, but essentially, it's a very surrealist, bizarro world, almost like dark fairy tale. It's a little Alice in Wonderland, which I know you love. It's basically this like magical realm exists, and in it, these people have learned. Oh, just give you too much. I don't think it tells you too much. These people have learned to stop time. And they're like these like aristocratic, fancy dresses, like endless feasts, constant garden parties people who are just they're complete lunatics, and they just abuse the children. Like major spoiler alerts and trigger warnings for child abuse. They have these children that work for them, and they constantly abuse them, like in the worst ways possible. And then the children are trying to escape. And the book ends up being about this, both one of the people at the party and a couple of the children. And that, what I just told you, is not where the book really takes place. The book takes place all across this magical realm and, like, entering into our realm. But it is wild. It is a wild ride. Every turn, I was like, what? Like, it's like one of those where I was like, this is what's happening for, this is going to be a third of the book? I cannot believe this is where it is. But there's this really interesting, for those people, I feel like this is some people's wheelhouses, but for people who like weird performing troupes. This is like, I mean, there's not many of these, but performance troupes
Station 11?
Yeah, yeah. Where there's a performance troupe who their entire job is to perform histories and memories and things that have happened. And they go around to all these magical realms and they perform there, and they just perform like, oh, the death of a sailor. And they just do these performances over and over again. And that's like one of the core groups that you get to hang out with. But it's just really great. I really enjoyed it. It's so bizarre, but if you're a person like me who loves escapist stuff, this is definitely for you. What are you reading, Mallory?
I will say, as soon as you told me about that, I bought it, and I want to say that I feel like Karen Tidbeck is good for people who like Jeff Vandermeer. Like, if you read Annihilation and you like really weird, surreal stuff, this is the place to go. I'm super excited. But I want to talk about a book that I am almost finished reading, that I mentioned I was reading on a earlier episode that we did either a week or two ago. I'm reading The Cutting Season by Attica Locke. And it if you are looking for, like, if you are a ton of French fan and you love, like, a really compelling thrillery mystery, you need to get on the Attica Locke train, because this book is blown me away. It's the kind of book where I've just been like, okay, I can't do anything else today because I have to read this book. Like, I have to take the day off. It's about this woman, and she is the manager of this plantation in Louisiana, and it's a beautiful plantation, and all kinds of course, like, white people go to have their weddings there and stuff, but the rest of the staff is, like, obviously a very complicated relationship with it. She has a very complicated relationship with the plantation because her family has worked there for years, and actually her ancestors were enslaved there, so she has, like, a really, really complicated relationship with it. And what happens is the back lot of the plantation has been sort of not sold, but rented out to this sugarcane company, and they farm it. So like, cause they don't use the back 500 acres. And one day on the property line between the sugarcane farm and the plantation, one of the sugarcane workers is found murdered, and it kind of throws everything into chaos. And it's one of those, I think I talked about this in the Wheel of House episode, but it's like this one event that explodes everybody's secrets and like all the dark things and the secrets that have been going on in this plantation and in this like corporation, all things that have been going on have just like, it's unearthed everything. And so she's trying to solve, the main character who's the manager, she's trying to solve this. And as she goes through it, she kind of realizes that this murder is connected to a tragedy that happened on the plantation generations and generations and generations ago, and like how they're connected and how all the people on the plantation are connected. And it's just incredible. It has so many layers and it hits so many wheelhouse items that I just been blown away by it. And I can't wait to buy every book that she's ever written. So that's The Cutting Season by Attica Locke.
And mine is The Memory Theater by Karen Sidbeck.
So we want to take a moment to share some listener feedback. Emily wrote in, as a reader from Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, I'd like to speak a bit on Amish romance.
Oh, please do.
We have talked quite a bit on the show about Amish romances. People have written in about them quite a bit, so we're about to get some insider knowledge. Lancaster is home to many, many Amish, and my stepmother loves the wholesomeness of the genre. Truly, the farthest this genre goes sexually is maybe a kiss, and not always. Anyway, may I recommend Amish Vampires in Space by Carrie Neitz? I haven't read it myself, but a friend has, and as skeptical as she was about its contents, she said it wasn't half bad. Also, if you want to do a deep dive about the lure of the genre, check out Thrill of the Chaste, not the Chase, the Chaste, by Valerie Weaver Zurcher. She wrote a whole book about how even those who are incarcerated love those books.
Aww.
So fascinating. We're going to have to read an Amish. One of us is going to have to read an Amish romance.
That may be on you, Mallory, but I'm excited to hear about it.
Oh boy, I'm going to have to do a deep dive in Libby.
So Brian wrote in and said, after listening to the episode on looking at other people's bookshelves and hearing you mention politicians' bookshelves, I had to write in to tell you about Books by the Foot, a company that curates bookshelves for their customers to display. This is what we guessed. We guessed that this was a thing.
I got really excited about this, though, because it reminded me of Fruit by the Foot. And I was like, imagine being able to buy books by the foot. That sounds like my dream.
So you can. So they do requests for boardrooms, offices, and most recently, lots of Zoom meeting backgrounds. So essentially, if you want to appear serious and well-read, you can ask for bookshelves of books on philosophy or 17th century literature or something like that. And they dig through their collections and send you some books. They have lots of DC traffic. So now we know how all the politicians fill their shelves. I find this equal parts weird and hilarious. If you want to read about it more, there's a Politico article, which we will link in our show notes. And just because Brian wrote it in, we're going to hear his wheelhouse. It's not fully formed, but I'd say there are some combination of stories about kids who never give up, court intrigue, huh? I mean, we've never heard that one. Books set in Victorian London, retellings of myth and folklore, and books where medieval monks solve crimes.
Wow.
Lots of crime stuff here.
I am very intrigued about the medieval monks solving crimes. I am down for that.
Just a quick bookmark for me. I just want to say thank you to everybody who supported Lucky coming out on Shudder. You can still get that free month of Shudder if you want with the promo code Lucky, but everyone has been so nice, and thank you for watching it. I really appreciate it.
I want to say I had a blast when we had the Lucky watch night. The movie is so fucking good.
Oh, thank you.
and you guys are going to be super excited to see Bria as an author. Like, there's even a scene where Bria like does a reading and a Q&A at a bookstore. And so this is like, if you are a glasser and you like thriller films, you have to watch this movie. And with the code, you get a free month of Shudder to check it out. So there's no excuse.
Yep.
So you can email us at readingglassespodcast@gmail.com. If you want a list of all the books we talk about on the show delivered to your inbox every month, you can sign up for our newsletter. There's a link in the show notes. And before we talk about stories with unreliable narrators, we're going to take a quick break.
Mallory, you know what's something important that I try to do every day?
Read.
Okay, good answer. Great answer. What else besides reading?
I know you love vitamins.
I do. I take my vitamins every day. How about you?
I do, and thank goodness, because Greening Glasses is sponsored in part this week by Care Of, which is a wellness brand dedicated to making it easy to maintain your health goals with a customized vitamin plan that helps you feel your best today and supports you long term.
Yeah. Care Of's in-depth 5-minute online quiz asks you questions about your diet, lifestyle, and health concerns to help you address specific wellness goals. Literally, before we started rolling, Mallory told me, I love an online quiz.
Who doesn't love an online quiz? It's so exciting. You get excited at the end. You're like, what is it going to tell me? And this one's particularly exciting because you take the little vitamin quiz and it's like, oh, here's all the vitamins you need to make your life a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And what's cool about it is you can actually retake the quiz as your needs change, whether that's pregnancy, aging, changing hormones, being stressed out by things like, I don't know, maybe a global pandemic, for updated recommendations whenever you want.
Mm-hmm. And your recommendations come in daily individually wrapped packets that are perfect for getting back into a routine. I love these. I will say when I was traveling a lot more, I loved them because if I was going somewhere for a weekend, I didn't have to get out my day of the week pill thing and I didn't have to throw my whole set of vitamins into my suitcase. I could just grab, however many days I was going to be gone of these individually wrapped packets, and it was so convenient.
Yeah, that's actually one of my favorite parts about Care Of, is because I don't have a little day of the week pill thing. So every morning when I take my vitamins, I have to like open each bottle and like put them all on the counter. And it just like takes a while. But with Care Of, it's just in a cute little packet. It says, hi, Mallory, on the cover. Mm-hmm. If you were a Reading Glasses listener, it might say, hi, Sarah. And it gives you like a little like nice sentence for your day. Mm-hmm. And it's really cute. It's just so easy.
Yeah. Yeah. We both really like this. It's been really fun. The quiz is fun, but also the products are fun. We really like the products.
Yes. No, the whole thing is fantastic. And what's great is that you can get 50% off your first Care Of order by going to takecareof.com and enter code GLASSES50. That's takecareof.com and enter code GLASSES50 for 50% off. So you get personalized vitamins in a cute little packet that you don't have to open 5 million bottles, has your name on it. It's fantastic, and it's all geared towards specific wellness goals. So that's 50% off at takecareof.com. Enter code GLASSES50 for 50% off.
GLASSES50.
Hey folks, it's me, James Arthur M., host of Minority Corner, your home through these wild times for weekly doses of pop culture, history, news, nerdy stuff, and more through a BIPOC queer and allied lens. That's how you get Joel Schumacher putting nipples on Batman.
Yeah.
I didn't ask, I say this as a gay man, didn't ask for it. I don't need to see Batman's nipples on his suit. Who is this for?
I did a bunch of research. I wanted to just know about the history of Black people in Argentina. So, not only did they erase Black people from their history, they also started to flip and use it as slurs.
We're not done. Like, we're not done with the work that needs to be done. And so stay awake.
So join me and some of your new BFFs every Friday here on Maximum Fun to stay informed, empowered, and have some fun. Minority Corner, because together, we're the majority.
This week, we're talking about books with unreliable narrators. Or are we?
It's a good bit.
What is an unreliable narrator? Is it something that might be in your wheelhouse and you don't even know it? So, Bria, let's start off by talking about exactly what an unreliable narrator is. So they're the narrator of a story, could be any length. It could be a short story, it could be a novel, whose credibility is in question. So as the reader, you might know right away that the character is unreliable, or it might be revealed gradually over the course of the book, or it might be like a big reveal at the end. Like at the end, you're like, oh shit, this is an unreliable narrator. An entirely different set of circumstances and situations has been happening, and I didn't even realize it.
Yeah. So a bit of history on this term. It was first coined by Wayne C. Booth. What an author name. Wayne C. Booth.
I think Wayne C. Booth was born 65 years old with a quill.
Yeah, it'd be weird having a little baby and naming it Wayne. He wrote about it in a book called The Rhetoric of Fiction, and he defined the idea as a person whose speech did not conform to norms and values, like the ones that we all accept. So later the term was finessed to be more than a person who doesn't always tell the truth, because that's what Booth was arguing. But honestly, like for most narrators, they're not always, if you're a sub, if you're telling your story from your point of view, you're not necessarily telling the truth. There is no non-subjective truth, really, right? So later, people started using it to mean a narrator who lies or conceals information from the reading audience, right? And there was an attempt to actually classify the kinds of unreliable narrators in 1981 by William Riggin, which is really fun to look through if you want to look through it. But basically, it includes different kinds of unreliable narrators, like a Picaro, who is an unreliable narrator because they are bragging all the time. You know, it's like one of the person who's like, and I caught the biggest fish in the whole lake, you know, like that kind of person. Or the madman who's unreliable because of a mental illness or using some sort of mental defense mechanism from the way they tell a story.
So it really runs the gamut. So some unreliable narrators are like, they're nefarious. They're lying about something on purpose. They're like telling you, the reader, the story, but they're keeping things from you. But there's also the total other end of the spectrum where unreliable narrators are, they're like innocent and naive and they don't fully understand something. Mm-hmm. Basically, whenever a narrator doesn't fully understand the situation and is therefore conveying false impressions or information to you, or the narrator is purposefully conveying false information or impressions to you, you've got an unreliable narrator situation.
Right.
So what do you
got
think
an
about
unreliable
this?
Narrator. It's like an alert. Oh no, we got an
yes.
The unreliable narrator walks in the room and an alert alarm goes off.
You're like, oh no. So what do you think? Do you like unreliable narrators? Hate unreliable narrators? Not care?
I like them. I'm into them. I love it, particularly in a surreal sort of context. I also like when you like come around to the end and we realize it's been unreliable the whole time. You thought you were on Earth? No, you're on another planet or whatever. I love that kind of stuff. Like that is that's always really fun. And I mean, this goes for films as well as books, I think, for me. But I think I like books that play with reality, so an unreliable narrator kind of fits into that world. I just read this book, just speaking of the braggart kind, I just read The Wasp Factory.
By Ian Banks.
Yeah, and that has an unreliable narrator because he's just kind of, you know he's lying the whole time because he's just like a braggart. He's just bragging, and he's just real full of himself, and he says all this stuff, and you're like, that's not true.
He's like a psycho killer or something, right?
Yeah, he's also a psychopath, yeah. So there's a lot of reasons he's unreliable, but I did enjoy it just because you know it from the top that he's unreliable. So you're like, oh, I'm interested in what this unreliable person, how they view reality. Because you're basically taking reality and seeing it through their perspective, which I think is pretty cool. How about you? Do you like it? Hate it?
I actually really like it. And it's funny because as someone who's obsessed with getting facts and knowing exactly what's going on at every single particular moment of my life, you'd think that I would hate unreliable narrators. But I find that, like, I was looking over books that I really like, and I find a lot of books that I like have unreliable narrators. I think it's because, one, they're really popular and well-used in horror the thriller and mystery books, and that might be why. There's so many great horror books with unreliable narrators. And I'm the same way as you. I love the shock of figuring out that a narrator is unreliable and then trying to figure out, like, what's really going on. Like, that moment in the book where you're reading and all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, something entirely different has been happening and I have not realized it. It's like getting two books in one, I think, because you're reading the story, but then you're trying to figure out what is actually happening.
And do you prefer that to the unreliable narrator who you can tell from the very beginning is just like full of shit? You know, like, is
yeah,
it?
Yeah. You like, yeah, you like I think the twisty, I like that a lot better.
The twisty turn unreliable narrator, not so much the one that's been lying.
Well, there's some books that I you know from the very or at least it takes you like, I don't know, maybe a few chapters to realize, but I think my least favorite kind of unreliable narrator is like the bragger guy who's just like, from Go. So have you ever put down a book over an unreliable narrator or pick one up? Any favorites?
Yeah, picked one up for sure. I feel like there's authors that do this really well. So there's certain the one I'm thinking of is Samantha Schweblin. She, I feel like, has a couple of like kind of surreal, weird short stories that have unreliable narrators. And her whole book, Fever Dream, that feels like kind of an unreliable narrator type book.
In like such a sinister way.
And then there's books I didn't know about but really liked them that you recommended, the Red Tree recently that I read. That is spoiler, an unreliable narrator?
Is that I don't think it's that much of a spoiler.
Okay. There's just things happening and she doesn't understand them. And you're seeing, I mean, anytime you're seeing people's like dreams that they start to wonder if they're real, that becomes like an unreliable narrator situation. But I love a book from a first person POV that just views the world really differently than anyone else. Like I said, and Drive Your Plow or Bones of the Dead is a good one. Literally classifies people, like she makes up her own words for things and she classifies people and has nicknames for them, which is kind of a source of an unreliable narrator. You're just seeing things so through her perspective. And then you find out, the more you go, the more you realize she is unreliable. It's not just those things, but she's very much
seeing
the world.
You're seeing everything through her bias.
Yes. We will call them
that's coloring
everything. Not rose-colored glasses. They're bias-colored glasses.
mud-colored glasses.
Yeah, they're very confused. But if you do it well, then I'm interested because I do, even if I don't agree with someone or I think their opinions are completely based on nothing, I like hearing them. It's like I'm getting to live a different life and a different point of view. I love a lying narrator. I love that kind of stuff. No, I don't love it in real life.
So interesting.
Don't lie to me in real life. But I like it in books. Like, I like when I'm being fooled or I'm seeing the world through someone who I completely disagree with. Like, that kind of stuff is really interesting to me because I think I just love differing perspectives, even if they're completely based on a reality. It's not my own. Does that make sense?
Mm. Yeah. No, it totally does.
What about you? Do you pick up books when you see they're from unreliable narrators? Do you put them down? Do you throw them in the garbage? Do you unreliably, I don't know what an unreliable narrator would do. Do you tell us you pick them up, but you really put them down?
That's the weird thing about unreliable narrator books is it's not always something you can kind of advertise on the jacket copy.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, you can't really, like, put the twist on there. Even still, I don't think I like them enough to seek them out. But I've also never put a book down because of it. I think it always has, for me, the way that I like an unreliable narrator is that it always has to be sort of a surprise to work out well for me. And even if it's, you know, not that far into the book, like one of my favorite books ever is We Have Always Lived in the Castle by Shirley Jackson.
It's a good one.
And the main character is unreliable because she has really bad anxiety. And she thinks that all these weird little rituals that she does have these real life consequences. And all her social interactions are heightened. Like there's in the beginning of the book, she's just going down to the store and like stops to get a cup of coffee and comes home. And she's so paranoid and so anxious that from her perspective, like everybody in the town hates her and it's like a harrowing experience. Mm-hmm. But as you go through the book, you're like, she might have just been getting a cup of coffee and like it might have not have been that big of a deal. But it takes you a little while to figure that out.
Yeah. And speaking of that, I mean, does that mean that here's a philosophical question for you. If you are reading a book from a first person POV, is it always somewhat unreliable?
I think so. You know what I was thinking, too, that I actually really love, and that's very kind of a weird niche of the unreliable narrator, is when people do things that are really strange, but to them it's normal, like the Addams Family. Like, the Addams Family are unreliable narrators. Like, they are just very weird, and, like, I'm always looking for books that are like the Addams Family, and there aren't any that I can find.
Yeah, particularly.
But I love that.
Yeah, like that book, The Convenience Store Woman. Like that book that I really love. That book, everything is very normal to her. And it's, you know, because it's from her perspective, you're like, well, this is normal. But I think if you were looking at it, particularly if we go back to the definitions, that's definitely in that first Wayne Booth definition of unreliable narrator. Where it's just Wayne would say, if it doesn't fit into the norms of society, then that is somewhat unreliable, which I think is really something we're both really drawn to. I don't know if it makes you unreliable as much as it just... Yeah, I don't know. I think there is an argument to be made. If we're from a first perspective POV, there's some amount of unreliability happening.
Oh, I totally agree. But I think we're both aligned in the fact that we love when a character is in their own weird little world and is trying to... If you're reading it from that character's perspective, everything in their little world is like totally normal. And then you realize like, oh no, they are very weird.
Yeah, interesting. There needs to be a name for that because I think it falls like it is unreliable.
I think it's I'm going to call it unreliable world building.
Ooh, love it. Into it. I think, wow, TM, trademark that right now.
Yeah. Well, because if you think about it, they're building a world that you're reading about, and then you realize that the world that the character has built is not reliable. The rest of the world is not like that.
Yeah. I love that. An unreliable world building. Add that to my wheelhouse.
Yeah, maybe a subgenre of the unreliable narrator is the unreliable world builder.
Mm-hmm.
Glassers, please send your thoughts. We want to hear about your favorite unreliable narrators. Send them to readingglassespodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you have read-alikes for the Addams Family, I'm always trying to find them. I can never find them. And before we test out some book tech, we're going to take a quick break. Reading Glasses is sponsored in part this week by Babbel. Hola, Bria.
Hola.
¿Cómo estás?
Bien, gracias. Wow, look at us speaking Spanish.
So in case you don't speak Spanish, that means that's me and Bria greeting each other. And we learned it from Babbel, which is the number one language selling learning app. Number one!
Yeah.
The number one language learning app. That's awesome. And unlike the infamous language classes that you took in high school, Babbel designs their 15-minute lessons with practical, real-world conversations in mind. Things that you'll get to use in everyday life.
Yeah. And with Babbel, you can choose from 14 different languages, including Spanish, which you just heard, French, Italian, and German. All these languages that you could use next time you get to travel. Next time you're going to Mexico, get Babbel. Next time you're going to Germany, get Babbel. We're all going to be traveling soon. We're all going to book all those trips. This is a great way to prepare for those trips.
Plus, Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you improve your pronunciation and accent, which maybe if you're like me and you're from the Boston area and you have a terrible Boston accent and you have a hard time pronouncing the beautiful the beautiful words of the Spanish or the French language, this really, really helps you. Unlike some other language learning apps, it really is working on getting you to be able to read these things, but also pronounce them correctly, have a correct accent, speak them really well. So it's such a well-rounded app.
Let me hear you say gracias with your Boston accent.
See, if I was saying it in my Boston accent, it'd be like, gracias.
Yeah, yeah.
It'd be like that scene from that Quentin Tarantino movie.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I would sound exactly like Brad Pitt.
Yeah, great.
Trying to pronounce Italian. But you don't have to do that if you use Babbel. It's fantastic. I mean, it's 15 minutes a day. You know, that's 15 minutes less time that you might be doom scrolling on Twitter, mm-hmm, or, you know, reading stressful news. It's just a quick 15 minutes a day, but it could really improve your life, expand your brain, and help connect you with people that you might not normally have been able to be connected with. And right now, when you purchase a 3-month Babbel subscription, you get an additional 3 months free. That's 6 months for the price of 3. That's awesome. So just go to Babbel.com and use promo code glasses. That's Babbel.com, code glasses, for an extra 3 months free. Babbel, language for life. Glasses.
Glasses.
Welcome.
Thank you.
No problem. Thanks.
These are real podcast listeners, not actors.
What do you look for in a podcast?
Reliability is big for me.
Power.
I'd say comfort.
What do you think of this?
Oh.
That's Jordan Jesse Go.
Jordan Jesse Go?
They came out of the floor?
And down from the ceiling?
That can't be safe.
I'm upset.
Can we go now?
Soon. Jordan Jesse Go, a real podcast.
Time to test out some book tech advances and bookish technology. This week, we're testing out a special kind of bookmark sent to us by Rosalind C., who wrote, I hope these actually work. It's called a book page holder. Seriously, that is what it's called. So it is a bookmark that's meant to hold your place by keeping the book open to that page. So instead of like sticking the bookmark in and like closing the book, it keeps the book open on its spine, lying flat. So these particular ones, they're metal, they're anchor shaped, and the anchor slides in on top and keeps the pages flat, while these two metal prongs in the back sort of anchor it. Bria, what did you think of these?
First of all, very, very high points for nautical theme. Very cute nautical theme.
They are very cute.
Listen, if you love...
High points for cute.
If you love nautical stuff, both as like, you know, like kind of a like kitschy, but also if you just love like a, you know, a pirate moment, then I think these are really great for you.
But you know what I need today? A pirate moment.
So I got these. I opened them up. And I was trying to use them as real bookmarks. And I could not figure out. I was like, why would you do this? This, the way these are designed is horrible. Like, I, because they're like, they don't move. They're like, stationary.
Yeah, metal.
Metal. Yeah.
I thought the little things on the back would swing out, but they don't.
Yeah. Well, I was trying to use them regular bookmark. Didn't work. And then I realized what they were. And turns out they are exactly what they claim to be. They are book page holders.
Very different. What they're called. Different.
If you have to Google them, that's what they're called. But these would be great for a cookbook. They hold the page open. That's what they're designed to do. And I think they do it quite successfully. I don't know if you had, like, they are a specific size. So if, like, for some reason you're trying to hold open like that Bible that Biden got sworn in on or something, like, ain't gonna happen.
The Buffy Bible?
yeah, ain't gonna happen. But I think, like, if you're just trying to open up a cookbook or something like that and keep that open, I think they're really good and they're cute. So, I mean, I'm into them. I like them. Just don't fool me into tricky thinking you're a bookmark.
It's actually an unreliable bookmark.
From my perspective, so it's really shame on me. How did you feel about these book page holders?
I did like these, but not for novels. I have two ratings for them. So okay. I tried using them for the regular book that I was reading, and I didn't like it. It was like 2 out of 5 pages.
Because you can't, because you have to take it out every time you turn the page.
Well, that, but also if you're just, even if you're just like, oh, I'm done reading for the night, I'm going to put these book page holders in and like put my book down. Leaving the book lying out takes up more space on a table. And it makes the pages, if you're me, collect cat hair for my cats.
I do not see why anyone would do that. Like, who would mark their book and leave it open?
A lot of people do.
What?
A lot of people. Yeah, I know. But for me, at least in my personal life, it would get way too much cat hair on it. Takes up too much space. Don't like doing it.
I'm sorry. These people are sociopaths. If they leave their book open all night, what are you doing that for? Why? Write us. I want to hear why you leave your book open all night. Close that book. It has an outside for a reason. What do you think the cover's for?
It has an outside for a reason.
That's like, I don't know. That's just shocking to me. That's like opening a bag of chocolate chips, pouring it in a bowl, and leaving it there. Like, it's just like so many reasons not to do that. And then I made a chocolate metaphor.
It has an outside for a reason. It's one of the greatest things you've ever said on the show. 2 out of 5 pages as an actual, as like a bookmark for like a novel. But I will say for a cookbook or a research book, these are amazing. I love them. 5 out of 5 for that. Because they don't take up as much page space as a book weight does. It's just like a little piece of metal at the top. But they are more difficult to change pages. So they're not great for keeping a book open while like you eat. But mm-hmm. if you're researching or you need to look at one page for an extended period of time, they're perfect. I'm just finished up the second draft of Girly Drinks. And I had like a couple of research books out to like add a few things. And just if you need a page open for a while, these are absolutely perfect. So great. 2 out of 5 pages for pleasure reading. 5 out of 5 pages for cooking or researching.
Great.
It has an outside for a reason. Priya, I love
to keep
that
the
so
inside
much.
Safe. Now I've thought of better metaphors, like a watermelon, you know? Yeah.
Just
a tortoise.
Crack a door.
Things that have like hard outsides to keep the inside safe. And you don't just leave a watermelon open sitting out. So gross.
Just cracking open a watermelon and leaving it out overnight. So if you have book tech ideas that you want us to test out, you can check out our wish list in the show notes, or you can send the idea of it to readingglassespodcast@gmail.com. Now let's solve a bookish problem from one of our listeners. Ellen writes in, thanks for all you do. I can't tell you how much Reading Glasses has helped me during my PhD in quarantine times. I've been a woman on a journey this year for sure. My reader question is, in the before times, late 2019, I moved to Edinburgh, Scotland, in the UK for a new job, and I joined a sci-fi book club to meet new people in the area. Very good idea. Hot book tip. It was the best during quarantine since I ended up without a job for a while. I made a group of new friends. We get together often to hang out. However, I have a new job now, yay science, and my free time for reading and Zoom calls is way less than before. I don't really struggle to decide what books I want to read. You guys, friends, and other reading podcasts keep my TBR full. So what I want to know is, how/when do you think it's best to leave a book club? Should I stay or should I go? P.S. My reader wheelhouse is books with robots/androids, inner monologue, detectives who give a shit, weird plots where the characters have a sense of humor, and women on sci-fi adventures, bonus for interesting LGBTQ romance in there. Bria, what should Ellen do?
Well, Ellen, first, we have experiences in our book club where people just stop showing up. And I'm just going to tell you, from the other side, it is irritating. So, like, if you just, I like that Ellen is thinking ahead, trying not to irritate the people in the book club by just quitting showing up. Because the person who runs our book club keeps it to a certain number. And so there's, like, a person that just didn't show up for, like, a year. And, like, but we couldn't invite anybody else. But eventually we decided maybe that person wasn't coming back. So, yes, Ellen, I think it is good to think of these other people, especially if they keep their book club numbers limited. I mean, I think you're being very honest with yourself right now, which is great, because it is easy to overextend. We all do it in this modern day and age of run, run, run.
True.
Assessing whether or not you have time for it, which you're writing this email, I'm just going to say, this means you don't have time for it. I'm just reading between the lines here. You are probably done with this book club. And just have a chat with whoever runs it and let them know that you love it, but you need to take a few things off your plate for a while. And everyone understands this. This is the modern day. And if you think you might want to return later, put that out there. Also, whoever you like best in the book club, make sure you tell them, like, hey, I don't have time for book club anymore, but if you want to get coffee sometime, let's do that. You know, like, keep those people. Pick out your favorite people from the book club and make sure you're keeping in touch. I just think it's better to let go of a commitment than do a half-ass commitment. Because everyone understands this at this point, and I think as long as you don't, like, you know, burn it to the ground and give them middle fingers on your way out, I think then you leave the door open as, like, hey, I'm just busy right now. I don't have time, and I don't want to waste everyone else's time thinking I read the book. And I think that's totally fair. And, I mean, I'm just going to tell you, reading your email, Ellen, I think you don't want to be in it anymore. I think you should let it go. And I think it's just a quick email. It's not even a conversation. It's just a quick, hey, I'm running out of time and my life has gotten, too busy. So I'm just letting you know I'm not going to make book club for a while, possibly ever, you know. And that's a nice, that's a fine email to send. No one's going to be offended. I mean, it feels like you're probably cutting off friends, but you know, don't. And I think, again, reach out to those people, you know, your faves, the faves of the book club, or everyone, I don't know, and say, like, hey, just so you know, I don't have time for book club anymore, but I would still like to get coffee with you occasionally. I love a straightforward email like that. I love when I'm very straightforward. I think it's very great to just have these conversations and not, no, don't beat around the bush here. You can just tell your book club, the person who runs it, exactly how you feel. Hopefully there's one person kind of in charge. What do you think, Mallory? What do you think Ellen should do?
I think book clubs are like boyfriends. I think if you're wondering if you're going to break up, if you should break up, you probably want to break up.
Yeah.
Ellen,
book clubs are like boyfriends.
I mean, it's true though. Like, Ellen,
if they're not meeting your needs anymore, you got to dump that boyfriend.
Dump him. Ellen, this is a tough problem. We totally understand. But it sounds like the folks in your book club are fantastic people who would totally get it. I'm just echoing Bria on that. Maybe you definitely have to send them an email. Maybe you want to pop in for certain books, but not be on the hook for every month. Maybe even that's not something that you're into. These folks sound like they'll get it. I think it sounds like being part of a book club sounds like just another thing that you need to do, and it's stressing you out and it's time to go. I think that's the way that for any listener who is struggling with this, if a book club goes from something you're looking forward to something that you are dreading or you're stressed out about, or just it's like another thing on your to-do list, it probably means that it's time to go. You know, book clubs are, I mean, they're for talking about books, but they're also for socializing. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, once a month or once every few weeks or a couple months or however long it is, you know, getting together with people that you like and talking about a book. And if that goes from something that's like that you're looking forward to something that you are, you know, is just like another thing, like, you know, mopping the floors or doing your laundry, then you know, you got to take care of yourself. And I'm sure if all the other people in your book club knew that it was stressing you out, they clearly care about you and like you. So they'd want you to be like, no, go do the thing that you need. And maybe when the world changes a little bit, maybe when your job settles in a little bit, you can be like, hey, you know, I have a little more time now and I want to get back into this. Just being open and upfront and honest with them. Like Bria said, it doesn't mean you can't stay friends with them. It's not like you're like, fuck you, this book club sucks, and like walking out. You know, just say that you don't have the time for it. Everybody gets it. And honestly, there might even be other people in the book club that feel the same, you know? Honesty is always the best policy. But it sounds like, Ellen, you gotta go. Mm-hmm. We don't think you should stay.
We think you're done, Ellen. We think you're done.
So if you want us to solve your reader problem, you can send it to readingglassespodcast@gmail.com. As always, we want to thank our wonderful mods who run the Facebook group and Chrissy and Rachel who moderate our Goodreads page. Remember, if you want to look sexy and support us while doing so, you can buy Reading Glasses shirts and tote bags and stickers in the Maximum Fun store. There's a link in the show notes. And if you like the show and you want to do something nice for us for free, you can please rate and review us on iTunes. It is great for us. It helps us reach more listeners. Also, remember, we're still collecting questions for our AMA episode, the 200th Reading Glasses episode. So you can ask us anything about books that we like, books we don't like, random things that are snack or cocktail or cat or dog related. We're collecting them now. Send it to our email address. Which is readingglassespodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at readingglasspodcast, on Instagram, which is all new and fancy, and Bria's been doing all kinds of stuff on it, at readingglassespodcast. Thanks for listening,
and thanks for reading.